Picture this. Cody and I got to grab an impromptu round on Saturday morning, and we were paired with a couple of older gentlemen who had come in from out of town to play our home course. Big shout out to Matt and Mike. Mike had one of the most fascinating golf swings that I have ever seen. It started with a normal looking but somewhat truncated backswing due to his somewhat advanced age. But it ended with this incredible outside-in loop, followed by a small grunt. And it was an incredible thing to watch, but remarkably, he managed to make pretty solid contact with the ball most of the time. It truly was amazing. I found myself reflecting as the round continued about what a funny sport golf is. These are two guys that we would never have met under any other circumstance and will probably never see again, and yet we enjoyed a fantastic time together. We found ourselves encouraging one another's iron shots to go just a little bit, and our chips to check just a little bit more, and maybe even our putts to break a bit. Golf is a game that is all about connections. So go grab a buddy or even some perfect strangers and go grab a round. This is For the Record. All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of For the Record. And before we get started with anything else, Cody, what happened to your head?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, for the listeners, there is a scene in Star Trek, The Motion Picture, where Chekhov is terribly burned at his station, and the medical team comes to see him, and they spray some sort of clear analgesic on his hand, and it's all shiny and burned and red and nasty looking, and that is what Cody's
it's not that bad.
Giant head looks
it,
like
his
right
head
now.
Is a little red. It looks like he may have smacked it
it's
on
the
something.
Shininess. It's so shiny.
He's a little sweaty.
Okay. It's not sweat.
Did you get sunburn and it's aloe?
No, and it's not sunburn. All right. So let me explain in my defense. You both know how much I love doing yard work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's his favorite thing.
And I do not know how to add more sarcasm in my voice. Mm-hmm. Like pulling down the barriers. Yard work is my least favorite thing in the entire world. I hate doing yard work.
There are subtle hints and clues about that when one pulls up to your house.
It is very true. Not today, though, because I did my yard, and it looks fantastic.
Nice.
And it just costs you your head?
Well,
the sacrifices
we make. The problem is, so I was getting towards the end of kind of my routine, and I didn't realize that I'd gotten some fertilizer on my hand.
Oh.
And I wiped my forehead. So this is a chemical burn.
The goggles do nothing. My eyes. Damn. My head.
And I didn't notice till after I got out of the shower and I looked in the mirror and I went, what just happened to my head? And so I tried putting, I was like, maybe I got roasted that quick. There was no chance. Put on some lotion, burned like a ray of 1,000 suns.
Not so much here. Or here,
but right here. It doesn't look that bad.
No, I mean, it's not.
It's noticeable.
The shiny cream that you've put on.
Well, so that's the thing. So I get out of the shower, and once I realize what happened in my mind, I started washing the heck out of my forehead. And to make matters worse, some of the soap that I used, then I got into my eye in my frantic washing. So now I have this like red eye that I can't see out of, and my forehead's burning, and I was a mess this morning after getting the yard work done. So the shininess is the analgesic that I put on. I don't mm-hmm. even know if that's the right word. The cream, the balm of sorts to try and soothe things over.
The bald balm?
Yes, the bald balm for the bald man.
Sorry, man. That's rough.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
That is brutal.
It's my own fault.
Rough, buddy.
Birdie Bev, Birdie Bev, time for another Birdie Bev.
It's time for another Birdie Bev. We're going to shake things up a little bit. Maybe more so in future episodes, but we received some listener feedback that maybe we talk too much about our opinions of the root beers when we try them, that we're swaying each other in our opinions. So in front of us, we've got a pencil and a piece of paper so that after we try today's root beer, you write down your score privately. And then once we have all determined our score, then we will reveal our ratings.
And then the last person at the table.
And we're not going to talk about it until after we reveal.
And the last person scribbles out their scores and changes it at the last second based on other people's scores, right? That's the idea.
And we hurry and look at each other, you know, to try and gauge, you know, mouthing, five? Is that a five? Is that a, no, maybe a four?
I love this. I think we should be able to talk about it, though, as we're forming our opinion, because I find verbalizing my thoughts does help, but I won't give you a score until we...
I was going to say, score it, but then we absolutely talk about it, and if you think you get swayed, I think you are entitled to change your opinion. That's your decision, mm-hmm. but your initial reaction should be your own.
Okay.
And this week, we are trying a Frost Top root beer. Looks like they've been around since 1926.
Please tell me it's diet, because I'm really thirsty.
It is.
Woohoo!
And I just wanted to comment that the listener was quite beautiful and just throw that in.
Did she send you a picture of, along with the comment?
She walked right up to me. And
it was his wife.
The listenership is relatively small at this stage.
All right.
I do have to say this one jumped to the top of the list because the bottle is huge and they want to get it out of their fridge. So here we go.
Yeah, there we go.
And I'll remember, this is diet scale. I have recorded my score. I await your scores.
I have recorded mine as well.
All right.
Hey, I want to hear these scores.
All right. Reveal, John Paul.
All right. I'll start. I've got a 7.5.
Wow.
I rated it really high. I think that it starts really nicely. It does have a medicine-y finish, but that is not uncommon to a diet root beer, so I'm going to forgive that. And I don't feel like the aftertaste was as lingering to make it unpleasant. It's got heavy vanilla and very low acid, which makes it pleasant to me.
Cody?
I gave it a 5.
Wow.
Really?
That surprises me.
And I'll tell you why after you reveal your score.
Okay. I gave it a 7.
Okay.
I felt like for a diet, that was a strong contender.
Mm-hmm. And I can tell you why I rated it so low on the diet scale.
Because you're less thirsty than I am?
Maybe. You know, my taste buds are not seasoned with thirst, you know. But in all honesty, I like the flavor of it for like half of a millisecond, and then I'm waiting for the rest of it to come, and it just doesn't. It's like, it reminds me of a Ford Pinto trying to get up to 65 miles an hour on the freeway, and it just can't do it.
Okay.
It's not offensive. It doesn't have a great taste, but it also isn't great. It doesn't do anything good.
Well,
I feel like it was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
I have a question for you, and I just want you to think about this. If I gave you something salty to eat, because you ate a sweet little snack prepared by our wives for their book club,
that maybe
right
that screwed
before
it up.
You drank it, and I'm wondering if you cleaned your palate with something salty and gave it another shot, if it would improve your opinion of the beverage.
You actually might be onto something, because the sugar bump you get from an actual sweet treat versus a diet, and it's not bad. A 5 for me is not bad. It's just I'm waiting for it to do more, and it just doesn't ever get there. It's missing quite a bit of carbonation. Doesn't it feel flat?
It is a little flat.
It could be a little old. I mean, it came from a hardware store, which is hardly known for its freshness.
But that's where the Triple X came from.
That was amazing.
Some root beers, though, just run a little on the flatter side. Actually, I think Barks is slightly over-carbonated. I wish Barks was a little flatter.
That's where the bite comes from. I feel over-carbonation helps add to the bite, I should say.
I think
does.
I like that better because it was smoother. The carbonation makes it hard to drink a bunch of something at one time, and that does a nice job of balancing it.
I hate to break it to you, John Paul. There is no vanilla in here. These ingredients are terrifying. You ready for this list?
Okay, bring it on.
Carbonated water, natural and artificial flavors, sodium benzoate, acesulfame potassium, sucralose, and citric acid.
I will bet you anything that one of the natural and artificial flavors is vanilla.
You think you would want to say that then?
No, but artificial vanilla.
Vanillin.
Ugh. I think that this label was probably created before. There's a chic age right now where people are trying to simplify their ingredients because they know people are more apt to read it. This was written by lawyers. Nobody's trying to sell this root beer with the ingredients.
I will say, based on the front of the label, I feel like this is something that you would get like in a 50s car hop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, not bad. I'm sticking with my five. It just, I like a lot of carbonation and I like a lot of bite. This is just smooth and then it tapers off and there's nothing after that. Yeah.
I just felt like it was better than, a lot better than like the poppies and yeah, or Olipop. Yeah.
And you could drink a lot of this.
I could.
Like this is a drink that like if we sat down to dinner and they gave you this, you could drink that whole bottle and be like, sweet.
Yep.
Some of the root beers we tried, even though they're good, you couldn't do that.
Yeah. I'd buy this again. I would. It's smooth, it's cool, it's refreshing.
Yeah, take it.
We've spent a little bit of time talking about this, but not in great length, and we've never really come full circle on this topic. But one of the questions that I have is, we're going throughout the season and trying to improve our golf game, and now having specific goals of how we can do that, and now we have the boss battles that we get to kind of a fun way of keeping track of our golf stats. Which
is super fun, by the way.
Yeah, they are
end up
amazing.
On the website.
I want to know, what are the stakes for the season between all of us? How do we come up with something that's fair and just enough of a competitive drive to get us all involved? And like, there's got to be some sort of stakes at the end, whether it's communal or it's competitive versus in a fair way of some sort. What are the stakes for the season? What are we trying to do here?
I've been thinking about this a little bit, and so I just want to bounce an idea before we get into anything specific. But I think that there's a junction here where roads diverge, and I think we need to figure out philosophically which way we're going to go. And let me see the best way to articulate this. Cody and I are competitive souls, and so we don't mind going out and trying to throat stomp one another. We will even do a little gamesmanship and trash talk on the course from time to time. But I kind of get the impression that that isn't very much Eric's style, particularly with golf. It seems like you're more just there to have a fun time.
Yep.
And so I think when the three of us are running, we could either choose to compete with one another, or we could choose to compete with ourselves alongside one another.
So before we go into this, Eric, I'm curious. Now, you were a competitive swimmer in high school.
Yeah.
What did you like what made it competitive for you? Was it the individual you tried to beat your times, or was it you wanted to beat the other people?
No, the thing about swimming is you don't see what the other athletes are doing. All it is pushing yourself as hard as you possibly can and then hitting that wall and seeing how fast you got there. And then if you did well enough, then you beat the other swimmers. It was not about, there was no trash talk. It was all, when you got up on those blocks, you don't talk to each other. You are in your own zone. You just go and play.
So you were a siloed, put on my reins. I want to do the best that I can, and I like it when I do better.
Is that you? That's the way it was.
No, but I mean, is that what drives you in terms of, like?
Yeah, I'd say even my professional career, I don't really measure myself by my peers. I just try to do the best that I possibly can.
That's a surprisingly healthy way of looking at it. It adds a little bit of fun to me to, I don't want to say do better than somebody else, if they're fair game for it. Kind of like with John Paul, with the trash talk that we do back and forth with each other, we definitely try to get under each other's feathers a little bit and ruffle them up because we know that it's in good nature and it'll come back. I'm really careful about what I say to you because I don't want to ruffle your feathers because I know that that's just not how you do things.
And to be clear, Eric is always a really good sport about it. But I think where I kind of started to notice this is that we have a stake that we play for every week that's the stupidest stake in the world, that basically whoever considers themselves the loser on any given week has to pick where we go for dinner afterwards. And we just do that.
I don't think it's a feel thing.
Well, and what's funny about it is that without fail, every single time the person that loses, so like, hey, what do you guys want for dinner?
What do you guys want for dinner? And we come up with something anyway. And or the person will say, hey, I want this. And the other two are like, nah, let's not eat that. We go someplace else anyway. But what's really interesting about that is that we had a stretch where we were playing modified Stableford's last year. And there was a long time where with the seven strokes that we gave Eric, he handily won the Stableford game every week. But even in that situation, if he didn't have a good round, even if he beat us, it seemed like a hollow victory to you, and you just didn't really care.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is that I'm not swimming in a lane against you guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's I get to jump in and swim, and then like you guys have to jump in 30 seconds after and try to beat my 100 yard. If that makes sense.
And it just doesn't seem to motivate you the same way that it would motivate Cody and I.
To be fair, I mean, that's kind of the heart of the handicap system in general, though. Like,
well, yeah. What I mean though is, it's difficult for me to play the game with you guys being so much better than me, because I'm having a much more difficult time. And so it's hard for me. And then it's like, oh, we're scoring it different. And then they're like, oh, you won. And it's like, well, I didn't play very well.
Yeah.
Got it.
And I'm kind of picking up on that. And so my proposal, just philosophically, as we're discussing the shape of the season, what we want to do at the end, I think we should take the path of competing against ourselves alongside one another. And the reason why I think that that's important is because, like, we had a chance to do some boss battle stuff, and I found myself like rooting for you because I know you had a really hard boss battle that you were wiping out. We were walking off. Frankly, our last round was a slog. Like, some days it seems easy, and some days it seems hard, and some days, like the last time we played, it seems impossible. And it was incredibly difficult, but even afterwards, I know, Eric, you didn't lose a ball all day, so you got a fairway phantom, and I was really happy for you, and we gave a high five on the way off the course, like, hey, great job. And that was, you know, I felt good for you. I was annoyed that I pumped a ball out of bounds on the second to last hole, but I was really happy for you that you had done that. And Cody and I, on our last round, both managed to slay the Puttergeist.
Do you need? It's just a one-time thing, right?
The Puttergeist, I think, is a one-time thing. But I liked John Paul's idea. He said he's going to take our little booklet, he's going to check it off, and then draw another box next to it.
And I'm just going to try and beat him
every
time.
Because he wants to see if he can beat him again.
It made me care about every putt. I don't know if that makes sense, but sometimes I get sloppy with the second one, and it made me not get sloppy with the second one.
I guess that makes sense. A goal in mind.
Yeah.
I like the idea of your self-improvement in terms of how much I improved. Kind of like if you've ever done an office like health challenge, oftentimes it'll not necessarily be how many pounds you lost, but like a percentage based on body weight or whatever, how much better you are because different sizes and statures and everything. And
my works have always done how much weight can you lose. Every single time.
Just poundage?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, not body, percent of body weight?
Nope.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
So it's always like, they're like, oh, how much do you want to lose? None.
If Eric loses,
Eric can't lose
if
anymore
Eric
weight.
Loses 5 pounds, we won't be able to see him from the side.
And I've even asked, like, can I do like a muscle gain? And they're like, no, this is strictly a weight loss game.
Okay, so scratch bad. All of that. And the analogy that I was trying to so poorly make was, what if each round, instead of just, okay, who had the highest Stableford points or who had the lowest score, what if each time we go out and play nine, we decide a certain things? Who didn't lose a ball today and they won?
Or what if...
Who had the least putts?
Or what if each of us declare the goal we're going for that round? Like, I'm going to get an up and, like, one of the up and down.
Mm.
Like, my swing thought for the day is this, so my goal is this.
Yeah, my goal is to get to the green so I can do an up and down at least once.
I like that.
Can I throw another idea out there?
So that way we're not all trying to swim the same lane, but
yeah,
we can each pick our old
I
goal.
Think that's great, and that could help us pick dinner, but here's where I was thinking. And you know, shoot me down if this is wrong, but If we each had a goal for a round, whatever that goal is, we say it in the parking lot as we're getting ready to go. If we each have a goal in that round, if nobody makes the goal, we go get the most disappointing yet edible dinner like available. Like literally we go get a Big Mac
They have, excuse me.
Or we go to Rome.
They have a Subway in town. We could go there.
Oh my God. That Subway is the worst.
See, so that's what I'm saying. And then if one of us makes the goal, it's a next tier. And if all three of us make our goal, we like order dessert at a sit down restaurant. Do you know what I mean? And
so you're saying if we don't meet our goals, they're like, I really want Jim's, be like, sorry, you don't get it.
You do not get pie today.
No Andy's mint pie for you.
No Andy's mint pie because you didn't do it. But then we're pulling for each other instead of competing with each other.
Okay.
Do we need a mini honesty moment here?
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I know that that's not really a segment on our show, but I would be completely lying if there's times when you don't step up for a chip that I hope that you just choke.
That's fair. That doesn't answer the original question. What are we doing for the season?
Well, that's a good question, because if we're competing with each other, then I think we need to have a reward for meeting a certain goal. And so I've been thinking about this. I have two ideas that I want to run by you, and we can clip these out later if you don't like them. But we will need permission from the wives. We have a tradition of taking girls' trips and guys' trips. I think at the end of the season, we plan a guys' trip.
Okay.
And I think what we do on that guys' trip and where we go on that guys' trip is tiered based on how close we get to these goals. Now, I'm going to go a step further than that. Are you with me? Listen to this. This is crazy. This is on my dime, so I want to make sure that that's clear. You don't have to talk with your wives about this. This is my dime.
You might need to talk to your wife about this.
No. I feel confident doing this. Wow. I feel confident doing this because we're going to do it a little bit differently than we've done it in the past. But when we set this goal, we said we want to be average golfers. So we've said that we want to approach average golf. We want to not be terrible golfers. And in my mind, the definition of a terrible golfer is a handicap above bogey golf. I think all of us, I think if we could be bogey golfers, we would be happy for the rest of our lives. I never have to be better than that handicap. I don't need to be a sub 10. I don't need to be a sub 5. If I can be a sub 18 handicap, I would be happy with that. Do you think, Cody, that you have what it takes to get to a sub 18 handicap?
Yes.
You have it. You think you've got what it takes. Eric, do you think you have what it takes to get to an 18 handicap?
This year?
No.
Oh, someday?
Ever. Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay, here's the deal. On my dime, when all three of us tick the box of a sub 18 handicap, we're going to Pebble.
Oh, okay.
And I'm taking us there.
Hope inflation doesn't hit too hard.
I'm glad that we're recording. Let me just go on and book my season pass to the golf course so I can go and practice a lot more.
By all means, if you find it motivating. But I think that's the spirit of what we're doing. That helps us pull for one another. Eric didn't get the chance to go to Pebble with us on the last
I did go to Torrey Pines. That was great.
It was fantastic. I loved Torrey.
That's like saying,
it was a great course.
Yeah, let me tell you the analogy here. The best analogy I have is saying, I went to Lagoon. It's great, but you've never been to Disneyland, buddy.
Okay.
That's the level of separation we're talking about.
I really
about.
Like this cheddar cheese when you've never had brie.
Some people don't like brie. I don't know if that's a
you
good
You don't
analogy.
Like a triple cream brie?
Eric
I
loves
didn't say
a triple cream.
I didn't
I'm
like...
talking to you.
Okay. That's catered to you.
Okay.
So
fair.
Pebble is special. And when I went to Pebble, I had a great time. I loved it. I didn't play good golf. And I think Pebble's a challenging course, but I was super disappointed because my only goal going to Pebble was to break 100, and I carded a 101. I have to go back. I have to.
I shot a 99.
I know you did. and you birdied the 18th hole, which is the highlight of your golfing career. But our best days are ahead of us, my friend. Ahead. All right.
So I love that idea, and I love that goal, the long-term goal. What's the goal? Let's go back to the original question.
This season?
What's the reward?
I think we've spent a lot of time talking. We've spent a lot of time just trying to decide here. Honestly, I think we have to decide for ourselves.
Okay. Some ideas that I've had. And if listeners have some ideas, feel free to send them. Okay. One was the last round, the best scorer wins, and the two losers have to make dinner for them.
Okay, we did talk about that.
Mm-hmm. And Cody makes magnificent bread. I can do crepes. I can also do... I can cook a lot of things. We can cook pretty well. We can make a whole themed dinner, and it would be great. Smoke things, all kinds of stuff. Or we could do that the winner doesn't have to pay for dinner, and either the lowest or the loser, the highest score, or the two losers pay for the winner's dinner.
Free dinner to the victor.
And I would say that we go to St. George at the end of the season, and we go to that lovely Japanese
Sakura.
And
that's tempting. Tell me what you think about this. Professional golfers play. It's over 4 days usually. Each tournament's Thursday through Sunday, 18 holes each of those days. Some days you have it and some days you don't. What if instead of just one final round, here's where everything, all the marbles, what if it was an average of like our last two or three?
Okay, yeah, we could do that. And here's another idea. We could do like the Masters and curate a meal for the winner curates the meal and the losers have to cook it for them.
Okay, let me throw one more idea at you. Rather than making it an average of rounds or making it contingent on a single round, what would be your thoughts about directly tying it to our handicap vis-a-vis the largest movement between the highest handicap of the year and the lowest handicap of the year?
I feel
wins.
Like you're at a quite disadvantage at that because you've moved down a few points.
With a broken arm and no neck and a low handicap, I'm still going to beat you.
So let's talk about that while you're laid up on the couch recovering from surgery.
Visualization is powerful. I'll be playing golf in my mind. Pain is a construct of the mind.
Okay, if that's how he wants to play.
I don't know. What are your thoughts on this,
I think it needs... Some days, we've all played rounds where we have it and don't have it. I like the idea of pacing it over either a couple of rounds, or if you want it to be the biggest differential from your current handicap to the lowest, which if that's the way we're going to go, I think Eric has the biggest advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Because your handicap is
31.4.
Yeah. You one good round, that's dropping 5 points.
Okay. Yeah. I could try that.
That'd be huge.
All right.
So if we decide that, then I started the season at a 21.5. I am currently at an 18 even.
Because of one good round.
Because of one good round. And so I think I've got one final shot at glory to get a sub 18 this year. Because I've got some low scores that are going to drop off in the next two or three rounds. So I've got to shoot sub 47 for the next two or three rounds to take advantage of that.
And if anybody listens to this and has any suggestions that maybe we haven't thought of, as of this moment, by the time you listen to this, we're ears. And if we've decided already, then still tell us what you think.
That's okay.
I mean, it'll be next year too.
And we can do multiple things. We can have multiple things spooling as well. It's not like it has to be exclusive.
Just like the boss guide, it's multiple things over the course of... I think if someone checks off their entire book, that you should get a reward for that.
And maybe the answer isn't we take one road or the other. Maybe we have some times where we're competing against each other and trying to throw and stomp one another, and maybe there are times when we're pulling for each other. I mean, I'm fine with that too. I always enjoy an opportunity to beat Cody.
Even when I see you duff a chip, there's, this side of me is kind of like, yes. The other side of me is like, dang it, that's my friend, and I'm sad he did that. I wimble back and forth. I don't really want you to play poorly, but I'll admit that when you do and I have the chance to best you because you're better than me, that competitive nature just comes out and it says, oh, I have a chance.
All right, we're going to try the slices right tonight. Last time did not go particularly smoothly, and so I have come up with a new idea, and I think you two are on level ground for this one, so I'm very excited. Today we're going to be talking about video games. We are all video game junkies. I think you two are evenly matched on this, though, because I am from a slightly different generation of video games. You guys are roughly the same age. You've played many of the same games. I have pulled up the IMDb list of the video game of the year since 1979.
Wow.
Okay.
I will name a video game, and you will each guess what year
it
was
the
video game of the year. You'll write it down, and the closest to the actual year will score a point. If you are the same distance away, neither of you will score a point. So you have to beat the other guy to get a point. So you have your paper ready?
Over, under?
Closest to over or under. It doesn't matter if you go, you can go over, you can go under. It's just closest to the value on the number line.
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
So
nope, 1980. It's from
1980. We are not racing, correct?
You are not racing. Kay. You'll give me a signal when you both know. You ready?
Phone is down.
Okay, we're going to start with The Elder Scrolls III Morrowind.
This is a particularly tough one because Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion just came out with a remake as of like a week ago.
It did. Oh, wait. So this is...
I will give you a hint. It was not the game of the year in 2025, so you're safe.
Okay, so it was... What was it? Elder Scrolls, which one?
Elder Scrolls 3.
Elder Scrolls 3. What's the full name?
Morrowind.
Morrowind.
Okay, so there's Oblivion, Morrowind,
The protagonist
Skyrim.
Travels by Morrowind, Eastern Province.
I have a guess. I'm not looking at Eric's guess.
Okay, Cody, give it to me.
2003.
Eric, give it to me.
2004.
Point, Cody. It was 2002.
Oh,
that's good. You guys are on it. Woo. Okay, you ready? Next one. One of my favorite games of all time, combustible lemons and all, Portal 2.
Oh, Portal 2?
Portal 2 was the game of the year in what year?
I don't think I got it, but I have a good guess.
Okay.
We will let Eric go first this time.
I did 2013.
I did 2014.
Point, Eric. 2011.
Ooh.
Older than you guys were thinking. Okay. You ready for the next one? Super Mario World.
Okay.
Cody.
1992.
I did 1982.
Oh, point, Cody. 1990.
90?
90.
For World?
Super Mario World was released in 1990.
Wow.
I was 11 years old. All right. We're ready for the next one? We're doing good. We're doing good. We're going to do Mass Effect 2.
That's a great game, by the way.
Oh, my gosh. The Mass Effect series was incredible. Okay.
Two?
Mass Effect 2.
I don't think I got this one, but...
Okay.
Eric, it's your turn to go first.
2008.
Okay.
2001.
Oh, Eric, by a long shot. It was 2010.
Oh.
2010 for Mass Effect 2.
See, I remember playing it. I thought I was playing it in high school, but I guess it was just out of high school.
Yeah, I thought it. Yeah, I thought kind of the same thing, and I thought it was. Okay, good job.
Okay, I'm gonna throw you a loop here. I'm gonna give you one that you are familiar with, but I think you'll be surprised by it. Tetris. Now remember, this is when it was Game of the Year.
Game of the Year. Oh,
Tetris.
I know. Okay. I have to think.
Wait. So when you say this is Game of the Year, and it is not Tetris colon something else, it is just the word Tetris.
Tetris. Okay, so I'm not trying to freak you out. It's not like 2020 or something. It's old.
I know. I'm just saying like there are a lot of versions of Tetris.
I believe it was developed before this.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. But this is when it became mainstream.
I think I'm going to get this way wrong then.
Okay.
Whose turn is it to go
first? It's Cody's turn to go first.
I said 1982.
I did 2000.
Oh, it's 1984.
Woo!
Cody. Okay, we ready for the next one? Here we go. Next one. Let's go with Half-Life 2.
Oh, that's another really good game.
I've never played it.
Oh, really? Oh, that surprises me. I haven't played it either, but
it makes me motion sick.
Hmm.
Okay, whatever.
Gosh, one of my favorite games of all time is directly above it the year before. Man, I love that game. I'm not going to tell you because that would be a hint. I'll tell you after.
Okay.
Eric, I think it's your turn to go first.
2012.
2000.
Oh, point Cody again. This would be 20. It's 2004.
It's
quite an older game. In 2003, the game of the year was Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, which is such a good game.
I've never played that one.
Love Knights of the Old Republic.
Never got into it.
Okay. There's
too many good video games. It's hard to play them all.
So many good video games. All right. And that is going to bring us to my favorite video game of all. No, it's not my favorite. It's close to my favorite video game of all time. It's my favorite one on this list. My favorite video game of all time didn't make the list.
I know what that is. I have a guess.
Yeah, what do you think it is?
Super Mario 3 is your favorite game of all time, isn't it?
That's my second favorite game. My favorite game of all time is Kingdom Hearts 2.
Oh. Mm,
great game.
But my second favorite game and your challenge is Super Mario Bros. 3 for the original NES. And what year was it the game of the year?
Okay.
Go ahead, Cody.
I said 1988.
I did 1990.
88? It is 1988.
Well, no wonder I didn't know. I wasn't even born.
That's good. We'll do one more. One last one. Final point. Here we go.
Is it worth 5 points?
Let's make it worth... Okay, we'll make it worth 1 point, but if you can tell me what it is on the exact year, this one, if you land directly on it, I will give you 5 points if you hit it directly. You ready?
Yeah.
It's obscure, but I think you've both played it.
Okay, just go.
Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, I love that game.
Oh, no, I've never played it.
Which version?
Just
I'm assuming the original,
on
the PlayStation.
Shadow of the Colossus.
PlayStation 2 or PlayStation? Because it wasn't...
I'm guessing the original PS2.
My list strangely doesn't say.
Okay.
Because it's been remade a couple of times, and it's always on the greatest hits list.
Yeah. It's tough. It's really hard.
No, 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 no.
He had a number written down and he scratched it out.
Hey, we didn't stop. Okay.
All right, Eric, you get to go first.
2004.
Cody.
2000.
Point Eric, and so close to the victory. It was 2005.
Oh,
that was a good one.
What's it?
What's in the bag? What's in the bag?
All right. And now we're on to what's in the bag. And we're going to start off with the driver.
Yeah, we did this a couple episodes ago where we did our putters. And this is driver edition. Very insistent by one John Paul because he is a new driver. We've talked about our fitting. We did mention on a previous podcast episode what driver you ended up with.
Mm-hmm.
But just as a refresher... Why don't you go ahead and kick us off here?
Well, so I think when we talked about putters, we talked a little bit about our history on putters, and I think that that would be a good thing to talk about here. So I started golfing with a pre-made set that my wife had bought me. I've been golfing for a long time. I had some old Persimmon clubs back in the day. But my first real metal driver was one that came in a set with my wife. And what was interesting is I kind of took up golf a little bit there and golfed pretty regularly for the summer that I had those clubs. And very quickly it became apparent that the extraordinarily whippy shaft on that golf club was not going to work for me. And as I picked up swing speed, everything was going very right. As a result of the club head opening as it came down. And so I bought the Nike SQ2 square head driver, and I had that thing in the bag forever.
I've seen you play with that.
That club makes the ugliest sound in the entire planet.
No, because
was
Callaway...
Was it Parker that played with it? No, it was your brother. We had your brother come out with us, and John Paul let him play with that, and he couldn't hit it.
It looks strange behind the ball. I still maintain it's not the worst sounding driver that's ever been made. That was the Callaway that came out that same year, the square back Callaway driver. I can't remember what it was called, the big red-headed one. It sounded like you were smashing a wine glass.
There's a little bit of a, you know, the Nike Sasquatch, I think is the nickname it got. Maybe mm-hmm. that was its actual name. I don't know.
Yeah.
It kind of got a little bit of a cult following.
Yeah. Well, I actually liked it behind, because I never had problems with alignment on the tee box. It was dead square on the back. You knew exactly where it was pointed. And that was great. I played with that club until it developed some sort of micro fracture in it, and literally overnight it lost 50 yards of distance. It just couldn't go very far anymore.
This sounds familiar.
Yeah.
And so when the Nike died, then I bought...
The Adam split in my driver somewhere inside of it.
Yeah. Well, and then I bought the Titleist 915D, which I've used faithfully for a long time. And I loved that club as well. And you know the story about how that's been retired.
Why did that one get retired?
The hosel separated back from the bottom of
that's
it.
That's not right.
When
said.
I had it, no, when I had the hosel back up off of it, where it goes in, there's a crack in the graphite underneath the hosel. So I glued the
hosel
back down.
It had nothing to do with the fact that Cody got a driver and Eric got a driver. No.
I could have sworn that I heard him say, I'd be like, it's developed a microfracture. I've lost 50 yards with this thing.
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, I was just worried about the head coming off. But at any rate, you guys are all just jealous. You're just giving me a hard time because...
We're not jealous. We love our drivers.
Mm-hmm. And we love you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I feel super... Yeah, that's coming through clearly. Anyway, so just had the fitting. What's in the bag now is the Ping G440 Max. And it's awesome. And it was fitted for me. I have all the settings and everything from my fitter. And unwisely, because my neck is starting to hurt much, much worse, I've been pulling everything left because I've been coming out of my swing early and it causes a flick of my wrist. So I've been pulling, tugging everything left. So I very unwisely screwed with the weight on it during our last round and promptly lost balls right. So I need to put it back and trust the professional who fit me for that club and just play with it as it was designed.
Did you change the loft as well?
Yeah. I screwed with both settings. And again,
Shouldn't have done that.
They're both shaking their heads in disgust, and I joined them.
Let me go get my driver fit and then undo what they did.
And then undo all the hard work that they did.
Ping makes a beautiful driver head, and I do think that your driver is awesome. I also am quite a fan of the shaft that you got fit with it. It's the Project X Denali Red.
Mm-hmm. It's so cool. It's incredibly
stable.
Have
you seen those putter grips that are lightsabers?
Oh, yeah. You showed me those.
They have like Luke or Vader's. If we could get one for a driver that was...
Like a regular grip?
Oh, I want the Vader grip on that red shaft. Oh, that would be awesome.
That would be money.
Anyway, I have named my driver. It's a very nerdy name. I am referring to it as Grepthar's Hammer, which is a throwback to Galaxy Quest.
Okay, Cody, your driver.
Okay, so a little bit of my driver history. When I first started, I had, you know, I always thought it was a Big Bertha. It's not actually a Big Bertha.
Oh.
I remember when I first like gave it to Eric and be like, here, you can use Big Bertha. And he's like, that's kind of offensive. And I was like, no, it really says it right on it.
It does not.
It doesn't. But Big Bertha is a driver brand.
To be fair, Callaway used the Big Bertha brand for years.
They did.
Years years.
My father-in-law, that's his.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's a bazooka.
Yeah, oh, it's a bazooka.
It's a bazooka.
That's what it said. I don't even think it was legal.
Bubblegum,
I think like 460cc is like the limit. I think it's a 480.
It's big.
I don't think it's a legal club. Anyway, I used that. It was a hand-me-down just to get me going in golf. And my wife, and this is a really, really risky move. Generally, when it comes to golf equipment, I would never, ever suggest buying another man golf equipment, right? Like we said over and over, John Paul, you're going to go get fit. You're going to choose the driver. This has got to be you. Your wife couldn't go to the store and buy the driver for you. Could not happen.
You never know what kind of shaft a guy likes.
It's true. My wife actually got me a driver for my birthday 1 year. And I was happy as a clam because the driver that I had had previously, the Bazooka, was just not doing it for me. And she had enlisted the help of some other people to get their input on what driver I should go for. And I ended up with the TaylorMade Jet Speed driver.
Oh, that's right. It was a Jet Speed.
And it actually was a really good driver. I really enjoyed it for several years. And I think just over time, you kind of want to upgrade your equipment. I mean, golf is a hobby, and you want to invest in your hobbies.
No, what happens is a microfracture develops somewhere in the club head, and you have to replace it.
I lost 50 yards, and I'm spilling everything, 90 degrees to the right. It's taking a right turn and headed to Albuquerque.
It's clearly my club. Not
it's not me. It's the club. You're right. It was a demo day at our local course, and they were giving away clubs to kids, so we took my son over there, so he got a little 7-iron and was happy just hitting it on the course. And they had some reps there for a couple different golf brands, and the Wilson guy was there. So I was just chatting with him for a little bit because nobody was at his booth, and that's why I say, Wilson is not a huge golf brand here in the States. He was super nice, super knowledgeable, and he's like, hey, this is right when their Dynapower Carbons had just come out. And he's like, you want to try it? And I was like, sure, why not? My son and wife were enjoying a hot dog and drink, so I had some time. I hit a couple of balls with it, and I was like, yeah, this is great. And he's like, do you want to do a fitting? And I was like, well, I don't know if I'm necessarily looking for a driver, but I'm a little curious. He's like, well, do you have your driver? It's like, yeah. He's like, go grab it. Impromptu, free fitting, and then afterwards, I was talking with the club pro, and he gave me an additional $50 off the driver. That's how I ended up now with a Wilson Dynapower Carbon driver.
What's the shaft?
It is a stiff shaft. I think it's 60 grams,
mm-hmm.
60 or 70, nine degrees. And we have affectionately named it Thumbershod.
And Cody loves that driver. John Paul and I despise it.
I hate Thumbershod so much. For those people who are not aware of the origin of Thumbershod, that would be the fat Dungeons and Dragons dragon.
That's so good in the Dungeons and Dragons movie.
Can I ask you why you guys don't like my driver? What about it is it that you don't
the
like?
The feel. Even when you get good contact with it, it feels like you're hitting a concrete golf ball, not a normal golf ball.
Do you know what that means? You're not swinging hard enough. Mm-hmm. It is a stiff shaft at 9 degrees. You have to hit the crap out of it.
Yep. And I'll tell you what I don't like about it. My previous driver was a 915H, which is Titleist. Now, the problem with that driver, it's always been considered a really good driver. If you hit it on the sweet spot, the power and speed are effortless. It bounces off of the face. My new Ping driver doesn't feel that way. It's a very different feel. I feel like I can hit it. I don't get as much pop off of the face, but I can hit it almost anywhere on the face, and it's very forgiving. But it won't go as far creamed as my old driver will creamed. Your driver, I feel like when I swing that thing, I'm doing all of the work, and the face is just a dead piece of steel that just hurls the ball out there. There's no pop on. It feels strange in my hand. It feels dead to my fingers.
That is so weird. I think it's the most forgiving driver I've tried. I hit that thing low on the toe or on the heel, and we're only talking a variance of 20 yards.
Well, in the Hobbit, how many beings does Smaug kill in the Hobbit film?
I don't know.
Like 5 or 6, maybe?
Well, he burns down Lake Town.
Oh, he does burn down Lake Town. That's true. That's quite a few. Thumbershod in the Dungeons and Dragons movie, in a matter of a few very entertaining moments, manages to eat a humongous number of people. I feel like that's the perfect name for your driver, because when you catch that sucker, it is hard to see where the ball lands because it is so far away. It is insane when you get a hold of that thing.
It's a great driver for you.
It's a great driver for you.
For you. We hate it.
Yeah.
That's fine. Just like, you know, in Harry Potter, the wand chooses the wizard. Can't use another wizard's wand. Don't use my driver.
Yeah. I think John Paul and I could probably switch clubs pretty easily. Yeah. Well, he wouldn't like my clubs.
But they're really similar.
I love your
driver. Eric, yeah, my driver is different.
Let's hear the history of your driver.
Okay. So my driver is a brief history of my golf game with the driver. I had donor clubs from John Paul. I believe I got Cody's bazooka driver for a while. And great clubs for a beginner. I went pretty far with them, but I decided I needed one for my own. And so Cody and I took a day off of work or something, and we went and hit up a few of the stores. We went to down State Street in Salt Lake and just hit up all the golf stores that we could.
There's like 5 golf stores all within like a 10-mile stretch of road, and I think we just went to all of them.
Yeah, and we were looking for a used one.
We should call it the Green 10-mile.
Yeah, it was great. So there were a couple that I was kind of interested in, but no magic wand moment kind of thing. And then the last place we stopped off was...
Golf Galaxy?
Yeah, it was Golf Galaxy. We stopped off at Golf Galaxy, and they don't really have much in the way of used, but we were looking around, and they had just marked down some of the last-gen drivers, and we noticed that they had the TaylorMade M4 down to a very reasonable price. So I grabbed it and practiced and hit a few, and I was just creaming them. They were going so far. It felt so good, so effortless, and so I picked it up.
And that driver is still, in golfing circles, widely considered one of the best drivers of all time.
The one thing that I would like differently about it is if it did have an adjustable weight, because when I try and cream it, it always peels right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like to have a weight so that I can move it. I think your driver, when you get it back to its normal settings, I'd like to hit it because I think I might be able to hit that pretty well.
Yeah.
Do you have a loft adjustment or anything on your driver?
Nope. Everything's stock, shaft, stock. It's like the 10.5 or whatever.
So the M4s, are those the ones that are the immediate precursor to like the Sim and the Sim 2s?
No, there was an M5.
Yeah.
And then we got the Sim 1.
Okay. Because my jet speed, I couldn't adjust anything on that either.
Yeah. And I love my driver. It's just the one small complaint. But yeah, I've hit it really well and enjoyed it for the past few years. It doesn't have a nickname.
It doesn't have a nickname? I was just about to ask. That. Thanks for joining us again for this episode of For the Record. If you liked what you heard or have any notes or comments or questions for us, send us a line, fortherecord.com, F-O-R-E, therecord.com, or call us out on our socials at fortherecord_golf on Instagram or on Blue Sky. Listen to us on Spotify, Amazon, iTunes, or get our RSS feed from our website as well.